This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Rich Bradbury and I'm joined in the studio by
Arvind Yuvraj
and Christine Wong.
Friday the 13th, folks.
Bum, bum, bum.
Bum, bum, bum. I'm supposed to have some sound effects, but I don't really have any sound effects.
We can provide the sound effects.
The nearest one I've got is this. Yeah?
Is that a cow?
It's a cow. It's not very frightening, is it?
No, unless it's a zombie cow.
I thought it was like the UFOs.
It's a zombie. I know, but that's all I had. I've got that and a sad violin.
Oh.
Sad violin might make an appearance later on. We'll just see about that. But anyway, it's Biz Bytes. It's not any other show. Of course, we are going to be with you all the way through until 1 o'clock this afternoon. If you want to get in touch with the show, 018-789-8899 and get us on Twitter at BFM Radio. We're going to be starting off with a story about how robots will lead to more human trafficking and slavery.
Mm-hmm.
It's Fun Friday, you know.
So you don't need sound effects.
It's Friday the 13th.
Okay, then flying trains. Story about flying trains.
More fun.
Yeah, a bit of fun. How bat-friendly lights could show how to make cities safe for the future.
Mm-hmm.
And nature, rather. Mm-hmm. And then how Michelin wants to put wood in your tires.
Yes.
Yay.
Is that a good story?
It is.
Is it?
It's actually a good story.
It's actually a good story.
Okay. Right.
They don't want to puncture your tires.
Well, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah,
Why would you do that? It makes no sense.
Yeah.
Unless they want to sell more tires, right?
Yeah.
Kind of smart. Yeah. Okay, Chris, tell me about how robots will lead to more human trafficking and slavery.
Yeah, so this is based on a report it's called the Human Rights Outlook Report. It's produced by Verisk Maplecroft, which is a name, and it's a company that basically does this Human Rights Outlook Report every year. And automation tops a list of 5 issues in that report, which are identified as presenting significant challenges to the reputations, operations, and supply chains of multinational companies now and in the future. Just to clarify that this report is a prediction, so it may happen, it may not happen, but this is what they are predicting based on what they know. So drastic job losses in Southeast Asia resulting from the onset of robot manufacturing are predicted to produce a spike in slavery and labor abuses in global supply chains unless governments take early measures to prevent automation threatening millions of livelihoods. So, with the UN's International Labour Organization estimating that over the next 2 decades, 56% of workers in the manufacturing hubs of Cambodia, Indonesia, Thailand, the Philippines, and Vietnam will lose their jobs due to automation, the risk of slavery and trafficking appearing in supply chains will spiral, says the report. This grouping of countries are particularly at risk due to the dependence of the workforce on low-skilled jobs and existing high levels of labour rights violations. So the report stresses that Southeast Asia's manufacturing hubs will not be alone in facing the challenges posed by automation, but the report singles out this region due to its importance in the global supply chains of multinational companies operating in the consumer goods, retail, hospitality, and ICT sectors. So the sectors where the risk is highest are identified as agriculture, forestry and fishing, manufacturing, construction, retail, and hospitality. So at the moment, already, this is actually happening right now, Vietnam is actually flagged as the highest risk of the 5 countries studied, where 67% of workers, that's 36 million people, will be seeking alternative livelihoods in an environment where the risk of exploitation is already high.
Hmm.
I don't know. I mean, it sounds a bit of a stretch how... You know, from automation to slavery.
Okay, so the kind of...
am I the only one that had that first...
No, at first I thought when... I mean, the way it was, I thought it was going to be that the people are being enslaved by the robots.
No.
Just because it's Friday the 13th.
Not quite yet. We're not there yet.
Yeah.
No, but what the kind of idea is that... displaced workers without the skills to adapt or the cushion of social security will have to compete for a diminishing supply of low-paid, low-skilled work in what will likely be an increasingly exploitative environment. This is a quote from Verisk Maplecroft's head of human rights, Dr. Alexandra Channer. She says, without concrete measures from governments to adapt and educate future generations to function alongside machines, it could be a race to the bottom for many workers. So basically, because they're already being, you know, very, very heavily exploited in terms of their labor now, when robots replace them, they will have nowhere else to go, I think the kind of conceit.
Because
of this report.
Essentially, they are bottom of the workers' chain, and there's nowhere else for them to go, right?
Yeah, so they will have to kind of resort to more desperate means of being able to make livelihoods, is the idea. Mm. And particularly, this would hit the garment, textile, and footwear industry. excuse me. So that industry employs 59% of all manufacturing workers in Cambodia, and excuse me again, 39% in Vietnam. I don't know why I'm suddenly coughing. It's a thing that's happening right now, but happening. That means. Yeah. Sorry. Roughly 2.6 million Vietnamese women and over 600,000 Cambodian women would lose their jobs already.
Go on, off.
Yeah, so no, I'm just thinking, and I have to word myself like very carefully because this has to do with like human like trafficking and slavery and stuff. But if you want to do something, you wanna exploit a group of people and you want them to work, you know, like use their skills of like working in the factories and stuff. Wouldn't you get the robots to do that?
Yeah.
You know, like if you wanna, like, I mean, not for like automation and stuff, but if you're gonna put so much of effort into getting humans out, and humans can, you know, they have their faults and stuff. Wouldn't you, if you're in the black market, wouldn't you exploit robots the same way, like sort of, you know, smuggle them out, use them for your own gains, sort of buy them illegally, instead of going back to the human, the human model, because it doesn't. I don't want to say compute, but it doesn't make sense.
I see what you mean.
Yeah, you know?
I do.
Yeah.
I'd like to know what people at home think about this. Whether or not you... I mean, it's a report from what? The UN, right?
This is a report specifically by the company Verisk Maplecroft.
Okay.
The story itself I found on CNET.
Okay. Let us know what you think about this, folks. How tens of millions of workers could lose their jobs due to automation, particularly in Southeast Asia over the next 20 years. I think that's something we've kind of discussed and talked about before.
Yeah.
So, just to like round it up, it's all bad because, you know, exploiting robots or exploiting humans or like stealing them and stuff. But the way I see it, I saw this in an article like somewhere sometime last year that they said cheaper robots will spike, so people start making these like rinky dink kind of robots and start selling them to the black market for them to use this in these like exploitation and to use them as slaves and stuff. So you'll have like robots that are not safe and you'll have robots that are cheap. So that thing I can see as a more likely scenario.
Alright, let us know what you think, folks. 018-789-8899. Okay, we'll be moving on to our next story now. It's about flying trains and how they could be coming your way. It sounds like something that Q, the tech guy in James Bond movies, would create. A plane that lands on a runway, shrugs its wings off, turns into a train, and rolls onto rails to drop you off at your local train station.
So
A plane in Spain could become a train?
Correct.
Yes. Oh, that should have been the headline.
That is going to be the headline. Right. So this is what a French entrepreneur who's made millions by connecting engineers with industrial groups is pitching to Boeing and others. It's called Link and Fly by Aka Technologies. It's their new flagship aircraft design with wings that come off to hasten turnover at airports and make boarding easier and closer to passengers' homes. Here's a quote. After cars go electric and autonomous, the next big disruption will be in airplanes. This is what he's saying. Boeing is amongst the prime customer targets for Aka, as it seems to limit its dependence on the likes of Airbus and Renault. So with their futuristic concept, passengers were born a train-like tube at a neighborhood station and have their retina scanned for security during the ride to the airport. Wings would then be attached to the pod for takeoff. This is all that the company has showcased in a mock-up video. It looks very cool. Now, playmakers have begun to react as technology companies come up with disruptive ideas, of course, from Uber's investments in flying taxis to Kitty Hawk, a startup backed by Google's co-founder. So there's a picture of this. I'll just quickly show this picture around. I know you can't see it at home, guys, but it looks literally like a train with wings.
Oh, yeah.
Not much more than that.
Super
almost
sleek.
Almost like something out of a Thunderbirds kind of idea.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
If people listening want to see the picture, where can they find it?
They can. Thank you very much, Christine, for calling me out on that. I cannot remember the name of the link. I will post it up in just a couple of minutes onto our website so you can take a look at it. But if you Google Aka Technologies, A-K-K-A, and look for Link and Fly, you'll be able to see the picture of this. They've got a market value of 1.1 billion euros. So they've got money coming in. Mm-hmm. They've got a whole bunch of people that are engineering experts, and they developed an autonomous car concept back in 2008, and in 2014 they partnered with Dassault Systems, who Dassault were the creators of some of the fighter jets for the French back in the late 70s and 80s, I believe.
Wow.
Right, and their stock has risen by 23%. So, yay. Do we think like the idea of this, flying trains?
Yeah, but where is this again? Where's the company?
They are based in France currently.
Okay, so how much you want to bet that within the next year China does it and China gets it to work?
Yes.
I'd give it like 1.5 years.
Yeah. 1.5 years.
1.5 years.
I personally do like this idea, but I also feel like I would not... just in my brain, I know that going from a plane to a train or a train to a plane with the wings and such would be the same as like a very, very long plane or train journey. But my main issue would be comfort.
Mm.
You know, I don't know how smooth that transition from plane to train or vice versa is going to be, you know, and then it will add on more to my like travel time in terms of just like, you know, you're just cooped up like in a train or plane space for a longer amount of time and stuff like that. So that would be my concern. But apart from that, honestly, I'm great.
It's pretty cool though.
I like the idea of
it. Right, let's take a short break. Let's have some music. We've got some Counting Crows coming up with Come Around. Don't forget, if you want to get in touch, 018-789-8899. The lead story today was about how robots will lead to more human trafficking and slavery, particularly in Southeast Asia. Let us know your thoughts on that. 018-789-8899. Time for some music. BFM 89.9.
Bringing fresh meaning. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm in the studio with
Christine Wong,
Arvind Viraj.
And by the power of radio, with it being Friday the 13th. Time for story number three.
You should have followed that up with the cow. And it means the zombie
cows. Wait. Hang on. Let's do that. Ready? 1, 2, 3. Oh, that's a donkey.
What?
That's even better. Right, anyway.
This is the wrong folder.
Right, ladies and gentlemen, of course, this is Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Rich Bradbury. We've introduced ourselves. We've done stories 1 and 2. The first one was about automation and how it could possibly lead to more sex trafficking and slavery within Southeast Europe. We then talked about a flying train.
Southeast Asia.
Did I say Southeast Europe? It's clearly Friday the 13th.
It is.
Right, yeah. And I've been thrown off by the donkey when I was supposed to be playing a cow.
This is a family-friendly show.
It's a family-friendly show, yeah.
That was a donkey.
It was a donkey, yes. Yeah. Story number three, then.
Yeah, it's about this Dutch town in Nieuwkoop. It's called Nieuwkoop. And they are next to a nature reserve. And that's this reserve is like a home to like an endangered species of bat.
Oh.
So they are the first in the world to have to install new bat-friendly streetlights.
Oh.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
So these streetlights are red. So if you look at the pictures of this small town, it looks very creepy. It looks like the Elm Street movies, the old ones, the good ones. And it looks very spooky as well. But what they say is that bats cannot see the color red. So they're sort of blind to the color red. They can see mostly in greens, a bit of blue, and especially if you have like white light, then it affects them a lot. So even when they wanted to set up this small town, it has like 85 houses. They had to get like a permit. They had to get permission from the nature reserve to say that they can set up their homes there. But in no way should they interfere with the wildlife that's in the nature reserve itself. Yeah. So what happens is, in like normal towns or like villages and stuff, when bats come out of the forest at night, they get distracted by these lights because these lights attract insects.
Yes.
And so when the bats get sort of go towards the light and sort of catch the insects, they sort of lose sight of where they're actually supposed to go or where the actual food is.
Right.
So they didn't want the same thing to happen in this town. So the red lights, even insects can't see red, it seems. So these street lights don't even attract insects. So they're just free to fly around wherever they want. The bats don't come into the village as much, and they go about doing their like natural thing without being interrupted by human activity and stuff.
Really interesting.
That's so sweet.
It also says that at first, for the people living there, it looks a bit jarring or looks a bit creepy, but our eyes have this sort of white balance feature. It sort of works like a camera. So after like 5 or 10 minutes, we don't even see that it's that red. It sort of adjusts itself, so we see it as a sort of pinkish, maybe even violet somewhere on that spectrum.
Wow.
And we sort of get used to it.
Is it bright enough for us to be able to see where we're going?
That's another thing. So the street lights can adjust themselves. So when they see, like, just say there's a cyclist and he's cycling at night, he goes under the street lights, it sort of brightens up a bit to give him
More creepy.
Yeah. If an ambulance is coming in, then the lights turn on. It's super bright so that the ambulance knows exactly where it's going, which house it's looking for. But if there's no activity, so like after like maybe 11, 12 or midnight, whatever, when no one's walking around, then it dims to like an almost candlelight brightness.
Wow.
So it doesn't attract other wildlife. It doesn't ruin the atmosphere. And they say that for like rural towns and like small towns, this is bright enough for them. So it meets the standard requirements of how bright light should be in villages.
Right.
But it's set up in a way that it doesn't interfere with anything around it.
I mean, you know, if my here's the thing: if my mum was living in this area, mm-hmm. for example, it's not a dangerous neighborhood, but one of the reasons that we think it's safe, or feel it's safe rather, is that it's very well lit. You know what I mean? Mm. There's really bright lights, and if you're walking down the street at nighttime, you can see all the way down to the end of the street. Something like this, I think, for somebody who's a little bit elderly, might be a little bit too creepy for them.
It might. But also, I mean, if you decide to live next to a nature reserve,
that's true.
In a village that only has like 85 homes, then I think maybe you want like some
you want
to be isolated a bit, right. You don't want to be away from like the city and the traffic and stuff. So I mean, you choose to have that sort of quiet and slight creepiness.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of love this. I'm not one for living in like a tiny village, but this is, I don't know, for me it's more of the like aesthetic of the whole thing, because I've seen the picture and it looks kind of awesome, creepy, but really awesome. And also, I love the fact that, you know, no one really thought about this until now. The fact that, I didn't even know insects couldn't see red light. That, like, to me, that's completely mind-blowing.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't occur to me that, you know, just because we can see colors, some insects can't see certain colors and stuff like that. And for that to be, like, a factor that is so easy to implement in that village as well and create a solution not only for the villagers, but for nature itself. That's, like, super cool.
Yeah. I mean, to give them credit, this thing started with Philips lighting. So it's their bulbs. And they started working on this it's been about 10 years they've been working on this, and then they sort of like did the experiments and stuff, and then Philips Lighting became Signify, and then they started to install these lights in the city.
I know that Philips also has, at least in the US, they've got like color changing light bulbs.
The
that you
Hue.
Can install. Yeah,
the Hue,
again, think is cool.
They are very cool, but also very expensive.
Well, it's an investment.
I know somebody who has a set of them, and you know, with it linked up to the Google Home app and a whole bunch of other stuff, you know, it has some very cool features, and you can do some really cool stuff with it. You know,
I kind of want some.
Yeah, me too.
You should have them in like your home theater room.
Exactly.
So it dims out just before your movie starts. And if we have a home theater,
I was about to say.
some of us might, are they? Have you got one?
Not yet.
Working on it. Yeah. Right, time for a short break. Let's have some music. A couple of songs back to back. Let's have U2 featuring B.B. King with When Love Comes to Town, followed by a little bit of Steely Dan with Reeling in the Years here on Enterprise Biz Bytes on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Best flipping moments. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Rich Bradbury, joined in the studio by
Christine Wong,
Arvind Yuvaraj.
On this Friday the 13th, no donkey in this segment.
Mm-hmm,
not yet, anyway. Let's move on to our final story. We're going to give you some podcast recommendations in just a little bit. But Arv's got a story coming from Michelin.
Yeah, so they've been investigating the use of wood in tires, because they've been saying that so far when you make tires, it's not exactly eco-friendly. The stuff that they put into tires also affects the environment a lot, but they have no choice, because if you want to make tires as sturdy and as tough as they are, then you need to source materials from places like this. So in an interview with Cyril Roget, Michelin's Director of Scientific and Innovation Communications, he says that the wood will be sourced from industry waste, and it could help reduce reliance on something that you might not think of with tires, which is oil. So approximately 80% of materials in a standard car tire come from the oil industry. Using waste wood to create elastomers or flexible polymers for tires could be much more sustainable. It could allow people all over the world to have local sources for their tire materials instead of relying on oil producers. So because it's way easier to get wood, like wood waste, than it is to actually drill for oil, which is also not as eco-friendly as using something like wood. So they're testing it. They say that proof of concept will be done by 2020. They don't know how soon they can actually implement something like this, because the number one thing with a tire is safety. If they find that the wood doesn't work as well as like traditional rubber and stuff, then of course they can't use it. But they also, Michelin's also looking at 3D printed tires that could last for the whole lifespan of the car itself.
Yeah, they spoke about this a while ago. I remember that.
Yeah, but they say that this is like way off. It might be even decades away. 15 years for proof of concept at least. But they say that unless some major breakthrough happens, but their concept is you 3D print the tires and it lasts for the lifespan of the car unless some major damage happens. And if it does, then you 3D print the tires again with the exact same template.
Right.
Yeah, so it doesn't use rubber. It uses fully eco-friendly materials and stuff, but this one is way far off. But this thing with using wood or waste wood in tires, they say could be pretty close, at least within the next 5 years.
I mean, I always like the idea of upcycling anything and using the wood waste to create like these polymers or elastopolymers or elastomers or whatever they're called. I think that's really innovative, and I really, really hope that it works enough so that Michelin can actually start rolling it out as an actual thing.
Yeah.
Rolling it out.
Was not intentional, right. But that's how my brain works.
Yeah, but I think it's pretty cool because they don't have to do this. Michelin can keep going with traditional tires. They can still make a lot of money. They are a tire company. So it's not like a third party is coming in and going, oh, you have to save the environment and you have to do this and that. It's Michelin themselves and they're looking for ways
to take the initiative.
Yeah, taking initiative, trying to be more sustainable. They know that the future is has to be without oil, or once oil depletes, then we have to look for other sources. So it's nice that they're working in advance, and it's nice that they're taking the initiative to sort of counter stuff like, you know, global warming and all these problems that are actually real. For a tire company, I think it's pretty cool.
Good on you, Michelin.
I like it. Yes. Folks, don't forget, you can still get in touch with the show if you'd like to. 018-789-8899. If you want to comment on any of the stories so far, get us on that number or get us on Twitter at BFM Radio. Should we take a short break?
We should.
Sure.
Let's have some music. The Hives with Go Right Ahead, followed by Queen with A Crazy Little Thing Called Love.
It'll be nice to have a sound effect before the music.
Building First World Mindsets. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. It's almost time for us to wrap up, but as usual, with it being a Friday the 13th. Okay, that's enough of that. We're going to give you some podcast recommendations that you might want to listen to over the weekend. And what are we starting off with?
We're starting off with how on Monday on Raise Your Game, I spoke to our BFM regular Shankar to talk about how integrity is everything. So we discussed the importance of integrity in leadership and, you know, may or may not be kind of based around certain events that have happened recently.
So from integrity to...
Still integrity, actually. It's about the Razak brand. Audrey did this, had this interview with Dr. Rozan Othman. They say the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, but is it fair that the legacy of one of Malaysia's forefathers, Tun Razak, should suffer because of the alleged sins of his son? So Audrey analyzed the Razak brand with Dr. Rozan to discuss the long-term effects of the recent scandals on one of Malaysia's most historic families.
There you go, ladies and gentlemen. That's all the time that we have for today. But don't forget, coming up after the 1 o'clock news, it is the Breakfast Grill replay with Dexter Lau, who's the executive director of Kim Tech Chong. So consumer packaged goods distributor Kim Tech Chong has been actively expanding operations as the company moves to consolidate its operations in East Malaysia and Brunei whilst developing its own brands of packaged goods. Will it be smooth sailing for the company? That's all coming up after the 1 o'clock news. I'm Rich Bradbury
on behalf of Arvind Yuvraj.
And Christine Wong.
This, believe it or not, has been Enterprise Biz Bytes on this Friday the 13th. Have yourselves a lovely weekend, folks. We will be back on Monday, same time, same place, at noon on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.